You're listening to a Zone Radio podcast, zoneradio.co.za.
This gardening feature is brought to you by Harry Humans Garden Center.
Hi, I'm Jeremy, owner of Harry Humans Garden Center, and I'd like to invite you to come and experience some genuine retail therapy at our special garden center, where our friendly and knowledgeable staff are waiting to help you. Come and find the perfect plant, beautiful pot, compost, potting or specialized soils, products to solve a pesky insect or fungal garden infection, and so much more. We strive to have a wide range and fair pricing. We're looking forward to seeing you soon at Harry Humans Garden Center.
It's 10:30 and time for the Garden Zone with David Parker from Budding Inspirations. And with him today is our very own Jeremy Fenn from Harry Gorman's Garden Center, as well as our sponsor. Good morning, David, and good morning, Jeremy.
Morning, morning.
Morning, see you good?
Yes, I'm good, I'm good, I'm good. Like a weekend, and you? Oh,
beautiful weekend, I'm burnt.
Yeah, I can see you good. Rather sunburned.
Yeah, I was like a poiky yesterday in the sun, I tell
so
you.
Now a question I must put out. Jeremy's got the garden center.
Yes.
Out in the sun. Why isn't Jeremy burnt and tanned?
Because he's good at his job and he has shade cloth, which he's supposed to have for a garden center to look after his plants.
And have you seen my skin?
Yes.
I've got to look after this white skin.
Yeah, but you see, I was just asking, you know. You're out there all the time.
It's hats and sunscreens and stay out of the sun for me.
No, sun's vicious though, hey, Jeremy, no matter what. Yeah.
Right,
we've got this puppy that sleeps with us and she put a claw on my back last night. Oh, my word. Cry. Anyways, so
our topic this morning is a continuation.
Yes, we've been a month apart, I think, Jeremy. We're back in it now, so we're going to try and finish off irrigation. I mean, it's a big topic. I do have short-term memory loss, so you said you had the questions, and we're going to hit back at it and carry on from where we left, I think, Jeremy.
Yes, I think go to recap and then move on.
Perfect.
Yeah, well, we talked about, like, how do you approach installing a irrigation system from the beginning, and it was to do with mostly the pressure coming out of the 100%. Out of the either the pump or the tap or
100%. And we discussed tanks versus, you know, counts of borehole, well points, etc. All valid points. And you can already see, and this actually, the weather has now suited my conversation with you a month ago, Jeremy. If you remember, in 2018, there was a big surge for tanks.
Mm.
But I think, again, people misunderstood that the reason for the tanks weren't to irrigate your garden back then. The actual reason for the tanks was to put water into your home.
Yeah.
If you remember, Jeremy, to try and, you know, wash up, maybe have something for the toilets.
Yes.
So you can pour into the cistern and that. So I think people, and then obviously what happened is after 2018, people thought, okay, well, the water's back, so what can I use the tanks for? And then obviously it became this big thing for irrigation and et cetera, et cetera. What I wanted to point out, Jeremy, is, you know, I got burnt yesterday and the weather, and it was 32 degrees out there. It was stunning. But in weather like that, guys, you need to water your lawn for a good 35, 40 minutes, depending on what sprayers you have, Jeremy.
Yeah.
And if you're using a tank for that, that's the point of the conversation we had a month ago. Probably half the tank would have been used just on one application. So that's what we were discussing.
Yeah, I think the tank can be definitely for specialized things. If you want to collect rainwater specifically for maybe you're doing bonsai or something
100%.
Really specific, and then you can use only rainwater.
100%.
Then you've got a limited supply and you've got a limited thing that you're watering, but you're not going to be watering your grass.
No, 100%. Also, very important to know is if you do have a tank, there's two. If you don't have a pump for it, Jeremy, then you can't really take the water very far.
Yeah.
Unless you've put it way at the top corner if you've got a really steep slope, for example, because as you know, Jeremy, every meter that we go up or down, you gain a bar or lose a bar of pressure in irrigation, which is pretty cool. So
I thought it was 0.1 of a bar.
Point one of a bar. My humble apologies. That's why we need you here, Jeremy.
Okay. I think you have to take it like 10 meters.
10 meters for a bar, 100%. Yeah. And that's why you'll see on some of the homestead farms and that they'll have the tanks like way up, you know, and feed the pipes. And then it's a different story. But, you know, because I always think a little pump at the tank can help, you know, if you've got a guy who can wash your car with it so you don't have to use council water, wash your dogs with it, you know, especially if it's clean. And the other problem with tank water, in my opinion, sorry, I'm not bemoaning tank water, there's a use for it, but if you don't watch it and you actually just leave it in there, especially in this heat, Jeremy, it can turn pretty rancid on you pretty quickly, you know, bacteria and if it's not turned over. So it's pretty important. But I also, again, guys, I'm not for tanks. If you've got if you've got rainwater, something that I've done for a few clients, Jeremy, is we've actually put a council water float in there.
Yeah.
And we leave it shut for now, obviously, and as the water's drop, then we can fill it up slightly and then we kind of mix it and then you have your pump off it and you you can run irrigation. So,
yeah,
you know, there's a way of using them, to be honest, Jeremy.
Yeah, definitely.
They do take up space in there, and they, yeah. So, but cool. And then when we were talking about pressure, Jeremy, we were pretty much just saying, I've been actually installing more now with council water. Remember, council water has a genuine bar pressure that comes with council water.
Yeah.
And the one lovely thing that I mentioned with councils is that you can... it keeps everything clean. That's the lovely thing about fresh water is, you know, all the nozzles stay clean. There's no sand in the system and et cetera, Jeremy. So, yeah, that's a bonus for me in that. Mm-hmm. I've got a client in Chapman's Bay. I think we spoke about quite a lot of iron and sulfur. So when you water, you get that smell because obviously they've got a well pump and it draws from the same dam, if that makes sense, that runs through Fishhook.
Yeah.
And, yeah, and then obviously the coloration of the house. So.
Well, what I wanted to talk about today is, like, I often get people asking about drippers. And I don't know what your experience is in drippers, because a lot of, you know, those little sprayers, the wind comes through and then half the water goes up into the air and disappears. What do you know about more targeting water using drippers?
Yeah. So, I mean, as if with everything, pros and cons. I think you spot on with the drippers in Cape Town. I do try and always tell my clients to set their controllers for, obviously in summer when it's this hot, you want to set it for as late in the evening as possible so that the water gets to the roots and it sits. And hopefully, for a certain period, it's always almost like the wind always drops off in the nighttime. I can't explain it to you, Jeremy.
Mm-hmm.
And in winter, this morning. But drippers, in my opinion, are wonderful. But there's two aspects that I'm not a fan of with drippers. The first is to monitor them, Jeremy, and to make sure that they do work, you have to run them on the surface of the ground.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're just trying to grow a lovely garden, for example, at your home, and, you know, they obviously works beautifully for herbs and vegetables and that because, you know, you do your runners and you can put it between and it drips. But when you're watering a normal bed in a home, you know, to have that ugly pipe sitting on the top of the surface is, in my opinion, not so lekker.
Yeah.
Although the color of it is, it's actually quite a nice brown color. You know, if you put some, I would imagine if you put a thin layer of mulch over it, you wouldn't see it much.
Mm-hmm.
But if you do lawns, Jeremy, you've got to put it, you know, you put it about, I think it's 20 centimeters below the lawn level so that you obviously pull the roots down. But and then you've got to run it pretty much everywhere in that lawn. Remember, if you're dripping, depending on the flow rate, I mean, they were 10 liters an hour, 5 liters an hour. Depending on the spacing, you have to run in the pipes half a meter apart and parallel all the way through your lawn.
You also need a specific one that can be
exactly
go underground because the I think they also get like
100%. Well, what you would actually do is you actually, funny enough, it's a good point. You would turn the nozzles upside down, so the water and the sand doesn't really sit on top of it. It's quite a weird. It creates its own little path, I think, Jeremy. But my point with drippers is the one thing that I'm not a fan of is the only time you know it's not working, Jeremy, is when your lawn starts dying.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you don't see it. You know, that's why I'm a fan of these big lawn rotors that spray. You know, I can go to clients, I can test it.
Yeah.
And remember, I can't really go to clients and test drip irrigation if it's subsurface because then I can't see it.
Yeah.
It's a case of, well, you know, Dave, that whole area has died there. So we'd have to literally dig up the grass to check the irrigation. So in my opinion, that can be the fault of drip irrigation. And again, a lot of pipe. On the flip side to drip irrigation, the thing about drip irrigation is you can run. I mean, I had a guy at a decent sized pump, 1 horsepower pump, but he had like 100 meters of drip irrigation because remember, it uses a lot less pressure to run. So if you're trying to cover a vast area and you've got sort of a pump, then drip irrigation, in my opinion, is good. But I think you would use it more if you're trying to grow a grove or if you're trying to grow fruit trees or if you've got your own herb area, you know, pots that we could come get from you and plant it out. Then it's a good thing, Jeremy. But when you're trying to water a large lawn in a constantia home or a big, beautiful bed that's got azaleas and hydrangeas, I don't think it's such a great option, in my opinion.
So specific applications are beautiful.
Yeah. And again, surface run so that you can physically see.
Yeah, and then replace and you walk. Something happens.
100%, 100%. I mean, you know this. You also get, doesn't have to be. So, for example, another aspect of, talk about constantia homes. A lot of these beautiful constantia homes have beautiful pots all around, you know. So we actually use a dripper there, Jeremy, but it's not the dripper pipe. You sell them at your nursery. It's like you put on the end of the Dan microjets.
Yeah.
And it's actually emitter. Like a little round dripper that drips at 2 liters an hour, 4 liters an hour. And the reason we do that is because sometimes you have to run water to the pots and you have to utilize the station that's closest. And it could be, for example, a rose bed station with standpipes that have MPR static sprays that you can physically see. But that amount of water is too much for a pot. So you have to make sure that you put a dripper on the pot so that when the beds run with the proper 5 liters a minute sprays, you know, those pots don't get over soaked and over dripped. So
yeah, that's a good
there
point.
Are other drippers that we use quite regularly. And for bigger trees, we actually use what it's once here called a bubbler. I'm sure you've seen them. They're actually literally like a little round thing, like a tap.
Yeah.
You can adjust the amount of water that bubbles and inverted commas out of them. And the one thing I learned with those, though, the complete opposite to drip irrigation, those buggers use a hell of a lot of water.
It's
hey?
Like a tap.
I couldn't believe it. The one day, like, I ran about 10 in on a site. I'm thinking, oh, well, you know, drippers, bubblers in my head way back in the day. And we turned on the line, and the last year had no water. And we've just figured out that this each one was pushing out like 7 to 8 liters a minute, and that had completely sucked all my pressure by the time I got to the last one. So, again, that's how you live and learn. And obviously, it's very important to design a system to check it out to make sure that you've got the right pressure. Whenever I do a design, Jeremy, I always make sure that I am a sprayer or two under the limit so that the pressure is always constant, you know?
Yeah.
And the same thing applies. So if you live on the side of a mountain and you've got a slope, I learned very quickly you don't actually run your sprayers down the slope. You would run a pipe to a point, and then you would run your sprayers across the slope so that all of them are in the same line. They don't remember, the lower one would have more water rushing to it then and be
gravity.
And then, and you would find that as it gets to the top, it's a bit less. So it's important to just little details like that, Jeremy.
Yeah,
I do love it. I do love it. And also to spray away from homes, in my opinion, you know, the house is always built, but damp is a problem here. So always try and spray away from a house rather than to a home.
That's a good point.
It's very important. Sometimes I like to do the opposite because I hate wasting water. I'm a bit of a water warrior. I'm not going to call myself that, but like I'll be driving down the road and see you, and I'll literally pull over and phone the council and say there's a water leak because now water is valuable and it's precious to me. So sometimes you overspray a pavement, for example, and you just see all that water running. I'd rather hit a wall and let it run into the garden and know that it's getting utilized. So there, you know, that's why it's important that you get somebody professional out there, have a look. Do a design, because I always go to a client sometimes, Shem, I love you all my clients, but they say, oh, my pressure's bad, and you go there and they've literally added and added and added and added, and you're like, you can't just keep adding on, you know. Somewhere along the line, we've got to cut, split the station, put a new valve in, and carry on.
Do an extra one.
Yeah. And that's about it, in my opinion. And you said you're getting a new controller into the country. How did that go?
I haven't installed it yet. I'm still playing. I'm still playing there.
Okay. Yeah. I'd be interested to see that, because that's obviously the very next important thing is a controller.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's my mind's just working. There's one thing I'd like to mention as well, and it's so irrigation is a wonderful thing, but it can be temperamental, Jeremy, and something that I've been dealing with, especially when you come out of winter and somebody phones you and said nothing's working. Basically, what's happened is, you know, you've got to run a wire from your controller to your solenoid valves, Jeremy.
Yes.
So it's very, very important, guys, that you make sure that the wire you run is obviously in a conduit pipe if it's in the ground and sealed well, or in the wall down to it, because what actually happens is off the controller you have one wire that needs to join to all the valves.
Mm-hmm.
It's called a common wire.
Yeah.
And you obviously have all the other individual station wires, the colors. The problem is if the common wire literally corrodes and breaks, you won't have any irrigation working. And I've literally been before to a 24-station Constantia home where everyone's panicking, there's no water, and you literally just rerun a little piece of wire and you know, it works and everything's working well. So it's very important, guys, that you watch it. And then, unfortunately, we are experiencing it this week, but this bloody load shedding is a killer. You know, 9.5 hours a day, Jeremy, the batteries that we use, even the good Energizer or Duracell AA batteries or 9 volts, they're only designed to last about 6 hours to 8 hours of memory keeping. So remember what the battery does in your controller, it keeps the memory and it keeps the time and it keeps the date, so that if there is a power failure and the power comes on, everything is still there.
Yeah.
But what's happening at the moment, Jeremy, is the batteries are being sucked dry from the amount of load shedding. So when the power comes back on, the time is wrong, the date can be wrong, and then if the clients haven't seen it, the time actually flashes. And if the time's flashing on your controller, guys, your controller's not set, therefore it will not work.
Yeah, of course.
So I've been trying to tell all my clients, and it gets, Sherman, it must be frustrating for them, because, you know, as much as I do it for a living and it's easy for me, Jeremy, it's not that easy to go to your controller and figure out what's going on, you know?
Yeah, those controllers sometimes are
exactly. And, technical. You know, trying to just explain, just to stop the time from flashing, but then the time's wrong, and, you know, it's important. So it's very important that you monitor your controller through these times at the moment. Obviously, if you've got a generator like yourself, Jeremy, or a backup inverter and that, and it runs everything in your home, then you're quite lucky and you don't have to stress about it. But very important, guys, irrigation, in my opinion, it's not something that you can let somebody like myself install and forget about it for 10 years. It doesn't work that way. It's very much a, you know...
No, there is a maintenance.
Yeah, if you've installed irrigation, then you love your garden and then you want to make sure your garden grows. So it falls under that banner, and it means that if you've got to get a qualified guy who works for you on a Saturday, and, you know, I sometimes offer to teach a garden guy how to check a controller over a period of time if I go to the house, so that the clients can get him in on a Saturday, let him do his work, and then he can actually go boom, boom, boom. You know, sir, ma'am, this isn't working, et cetera, et cetera. So very important in my opinion, I think.
Yeah. I wanted to ask a question about pipe. My question
yes.
for the pipe is LDPE and HDPE. Those are the sort of things that are thrown around.
Okay.
And in my situation, I'm only mostly sell the LDPE, which yes. is the low density
yes.
polyethylene.
I know, because I try to buy from you over there.
And just because it's for, you know, for the DIY small garden, it's usually good enough. What is the actual difference, and where would you use the HDPE?
Okay, so when you asked me about pipe, I got all excited. It was clearly not the right pipe. So we're gonna no. So Jeremy, look, it's just as everything that's so the LDPE stands for low density polyethylene piping, and obviously the HDPE is high density. HDPE is just a thicker wall, very strong pipe. It's a pipe that you would need to cut with a hacksaw,
uh-huh.
and what you would normally use it is you wouldn't be able to use an LDPE pipe between your borehole and your pump, for example, Jeremy. It would actually keep popping because the pressure, remember, that's always under pressure. So that's why you'll find that
if you're compressing.
Yeah, on yeah, the suction size. 100%. Yeah, yeah. I've seen it before. But what you would use it for is if you were trying to save money as from your valves into the garden, it can be used. But sometimes you've got to run a pipe, they say, on a surface to get it to an area, for example, Jeremy. And if that surface is hit by the sun, especially in Cape Town, the LDPE within a year or two gets very brittle. And I've come to a house where it's actually cracked all the way along the top where it is. Now, you get what we call a full flow. So we're going to go one step further. So LDPE FF, full flow, and HDPE FF as well. So basically, a full flow pipe, Jeremy, and you sell the fittings. It's mm-hmm. If anyone knows of the 20 mil pipe, it's got the green fittings that you'd buy at your local nursery, and you obviously put the fittings on the outside of the pipe to fix a leak, for example. That's what we call a full flow pipe, and they go into a fitting. And the difference between a full flow when you're using a class 6. Because now it's strange to me, even though it's LDPE, we're getting a class 3 and a class 6. So the LDPE class 6 is just a stronger pipe. It's a thicker wall pipe. The outside diameter is still the same of the LDPE class 3 full flow, though. And the difference, in my opinion, though, Jeremy, is because the pipe's a little bit thicker, although the diameter's the same, when you're using those full flow fittings, if you put your fingers inside of them, they've got like these little hooks to it
again. Yeah, yeah.
And they are actually what sort of hold the pipe in place. And the thicker pipe seems to take up the space more, and you don't generally get a leak. Where I've seen on the class 3 LDPE pipe, sometimes even on the straight joiners, even if you just put it on, because it's quite soft, and if it gets a bit warm, you see like it drips out the side a little bit. So I'm always a fan of encouraging this class 6 pipe. Mm. It is a bit more expensive, Jeremy, but I think you get much more wear and tear out of it, to be honest. And then going back to the HDPE pipe, that is, you get two sorts of HDPE piping. You get the one that you can only use an exterior fitting on, even though it's high density, and those are those big blue fittings. I'm sure you've seen them, Jeremy.
Yeah, now, the black ones, compression fittings.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The black ones, I think, are for 20 mil or 25 mil. You get the blue ones are for 32 and 40 and 50. Those would be the type of ones that, for example, if a plumber had to use a black piping, he would use that pipe and you'd use those fittings because they're under pressure all the time. And you've got to consider that. And then you actually get the insert fitting option of that, where you have such a HC high density pressure pipe that you would have to push in an insert fitting of the clamps. The problem is that it's not very conducive for the homeowner, because you actually need a blowtorch or a gas torch, and you actually need to warm up the pipe in order to get the insert fittings in. Sometimes when I forget it at the office, I'll have to beg a client to use their kettle, and we literally take boiling water, and you'll put the piece of pipe in there, boiling water, just to soften it so you can actually get the fittings in.
Mm.
And I think you'll start figuring out that that's the difference between – you wouldn't run a – So just so we don't confuse people, you get your mains, which then supplies the manifold.
Mm-hmm.
And between the mains and the manifold, no matter it be a pump or tank, whatever, must be HDPE piping. so that it withstands the pressure. And if it's just a tap to normally we use a polycop piping, obviously, Jeremy, if we're going from a council water to a manifold with the brass Konex fittings. And then when you put your valves in, from the valves into the garden known as the stations, you can use the lower pressure pipe just for the exterior fittings. Because remember, the only time there's water flowing through those pipes is when you open the station or something. So that's
it's
the difference.
Under pressure.
Yeah, it's not under pressure all the time. And I've just got to the point now where I use the compression fittings, as you said. They're wonderful fittings. They come with a screw on thread. They've got like a little washer in there. They've got a little white clamp push that tightens.
Yeah, it's got that gasket.
Yeah, it's very, very cool. And they work just like a charm. And I've actually got to the point now, even on council water, if I'm using it, that's how I run them in. And you just know that it's going to last well.
Using that PEX pipe. Not the polycop anymore. The PEX is that black one or the
that's the one.
Polycop. Oh, we've had so many problems with polycop over the years because they're just like
exactly.
You know, get brittle and then you've got
same thing
leaks popping all over the place.
But back in the day, you could when pricing was good, you could buy the brass polycop pipes. I don't know if you've ever seen. Jeez, but nowadays to do that, my dad always used to. You know, my dad always did things properly, and you buy 1 meter, 6 meter run now, and it's like 400-500 rand. I mean, it's valuable to put it in. It just costs too much money now, Jeremy. So, but again, just one silly little bit of advice, Jeremy. Now, we talk about the sun and that. The sun is a killer, guys.
Yeah.
The sun will break everything. No matter, you know, you buy wood and the wood's treated. No matter what you do, guys, wet, hot, wet, it everything takes a grilling. So I'm also very much a fan of the preparation is key to any job. If you know you're running your pipe, for example, if you've got a 110 mil downpipe from a gutter, for example, if you run your pipe next to that, it kind of provides it with a bit of shade all day, Jeremy. You know what I mean? The shade of that big pipe will protect that little pipe
a little bit.
So
of planning.
There's a little bit of a thought that can go into doing it. You know, you can run the pipe more on a shady wall, for example. You know, like a north wall will only get remember my bearings quickly? So north wall will get a lot more shade than a south wall, for example, or the west wall. So you can plan little things like that. And obviously digging a pipe into the ground is especially the black polythene pipes we're talking about, it's much better to put it into the ground, Jeremy, and run it underground so that it's not in the sun, you know?
Yeah, you just got to know that that's
100%.
There. 100%. No. Often that's where the people run in.
It's funny you say that. I didn't mention this on the drip piping we were talking about 10 minutes ago when you run in your lawn.
Yeah.
The problem with that is because you've got to run it so superficial. I used to manage an old that time, Jeremy, and I got in there and I know what I'm doing and I'm going to feed all this grass, but before we do, we got a scarify, and I went and hired a scarified roller. I literally did one sort of like between all the units at an old age home. You can picture it. I mean, they're 200-400 square meters, and then they've got like seven of those in a row, you know, with these and I rolled this one out, and I thought, well, before I move on, let me check it. Turn on the water, and whoever installed the irrigation did not do the right job, did not sink at the required depth, and I literally had like a water park, man. I had flipping water coming up everywhere. It was a nightmare, Jeremy.
You had to redo the
whole
thing.
So it's very important to mentioned, put your pipes in deep enough that you can't hit them with a fork spade, for example. Because remember, guys, as we've spoken about for months on the show now, gardens require a lot of love, a lot of care. Sometimes you've got to take a fork spade to your lawn to scarify, to put some holes in there so you can get some nutrients to the roots and that. And if you haven't done the irrigation properly, you'll end up with a lot more headaches than good, Jeremy.
No, 2 minutes.
Yep, 2 minutes. 2 minutes and come. So I think, Jeremy, I think we're going to end it there because it's one of those topics that we could just carry on and go on and on about. So I'd like to mention that you know, you can get a hold of me. I do full irrigation quotes, and if you are a DIY type of gentleman, Jeremy stocks an amazing range of irrigation products. Pretty much everything you need to install a good basic system. So, and Jeremy's there, and what I love about Jeremy is, when he needs a bit of advice, especially on the irrigation side, he'll give me a call. And if he calls me from the nursery, I can help you out. And that's us. And I mean, I've just bought two of your gardenia controllers. I must say, something that I'm really enjoying are those tap timer controllers.
Okay.
You know? Because you can click on a full irrigation system, and then you can actually unclick them and put a hose pipe on if you need. And I'm really enjoying them, Jeremy. And they're just a really easy way to go. No wires, no fuss. It's a battery-operated thing.
But it's only obviously one station.
Well, no, I bought the two-station one from you.
Okay.
Yeah, I got the double one for a client that I'm doing in town this week. But, I really appreciate you, Jenny. Thank you so much.
Thank you for coming.
How's your hand today?
My hand. Picky, but it's getting there.
Okay, well, we all love and care for you, so everyone wants to know how you're doing out there, I promise.
Well, thank you, Jeremy. Thank you as well for coming
Jeremy.
In, sharing your expertise and knowledge with us.
I was just going to say that if someone wants a specific irrigation pot, they can all always ask me for things. So, I mean, I do stock a huge range, but, you know, there might be something specific that someone has seen and want, and then I can try and source that as well. So yeah, that option's always 100%, there as well.
100%.
Well, thank you for sharing that, and make your way to Harry Humans and get in contact with Jeremy and try and find David. David, you're very easy to find, are you not? Thanks, you guys. Have a liquor.
Thank you.
This gardening feature was brought to you by Harry Humans Garden Center.
Hi, I'm Jeremy, owner of Harry Humans Garden Center, and I'd like to invite you to come and experience some genuine retail therapy at our special garden center, where our friendly and knowledgeable staff are waiting to help you. Come and find the perfect plant, beautiful pot, compost, potting or specialized soils, products to solve a pesky insect or fungal garden infection, and so much more. We strive to have a wide range and fair pricing. We're looking forward to seeing you soon at Harry Humans Garden Center.